Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White. Joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I am delighted to be here, Jeff.
Yeah, me as well.
I mean, I don't think I've ever been more excited to record a podcast.
it is probably our final recording for the 2025 season.
Yeah.
So that's exciting for sure.
You know. That although people will probably be listening to this in 2026, I suppose.
Absolutely.
So I guess I hope everyone's having a happy new year then.
And things are kicking off well in 2026. And you did your planning in Q4 2024 or 2025.
Exactly.
So you're starting out in a good place.
But we don't need to dwell on that today. We have a wonderful guest joining us.
We do, absolutely. It's kind of an interesting topic too.
Kind of?
Yeah.
I think it's an incredibly interesting topic.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. So what are we talking about?
Well, I thought that was your part.
So I think what we're, you know, where we're going is this notion of marketing with purpose. And, you know, to get there, you really need to have a deep and thorough understanding of the organization you're working with.
Yeah, and the culture you're working with, and what you're actually bringing forth, I love the way that today's guest kind of thinks and talks about it. So I'm excited to share that with everyone.
Absolutely. So joining us today is Alice DeSanto. Alice is VP of Marketing at Autonomous Solutions Incorporated. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Alice.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen.
Alice, that's how you know it's the first time being on the show. You referred to us as gentlemen, but thank you so much for joining us. It is a pleasure to have you. And I'd love to start by just telling our listeners a bit about you and a bit about your background, and then we'll learn about how you ended up at Autonomous Solutions as well.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so I have a history that's pretty diverse in marketing experience. It kind of runs the gamut of senior leadership in a lot of different sales and marketing roles for three multinational technology manufacturers, but it also goes into healthcare and a few other worthy gigs in between. You know, life kind of takes you places. But when I was preparing for this day, I was like thinking, you know, without counting necessarily those preteen babysitting things, I feel like I've been working all my life, you know, hustling either at paid gigs or with volunteerism, which really like fills me. This tech-centric career that I'm currently in with Autonomous Solutions Incorporated, that actually started back with Toyota Motor Sales. I was there for nearly a decade, and I actually really loved it. It's a great place to grow up. Motherhood and relocations with my husband's job, you know, opened up, took me away from Toyota and opened up other professional opportunities. And then I finally got all roads leading back to technology in 2014, and very specifically into the space of robotics and automation. And like you mentioned, now I'm VP of Autonomous Solutions, and we're actually over 25 years now as the global leader for what we call agnostic industrial off-road vehicle automation. And that's really under the genius of our CEO, Mel Torrey, who right out of college got the attention of John Deere and asked him to kind of join them on a project, which you'll hear him talk, actually has taken 23 years to come to market, because robotics and automation is a huge slow burn and a lot of adoption issues associated with that. But, you know, quite frankly, now we are like I said, the leader in super giant robots that do really cool things all by themselves in fleets for things like construction, agriculture, logistics, you name it. Really, really fun stuff.
There's some incredibly amazing video on the website of these machines in action, and it's hard to imagine that they're autonomous.
Right, I know. And the real thing of it is that actually makes the work environment safer for everybody. It's getting people's minds around the fact that they don't want to be doing what we say over and over again, the dirty, dull, and dangerous jobs. I mean, I should just throw that in. So Mel himself, he grew up on a farm in Canada, and his dad actually kept him out of school because they had a family farm. And so his job, in order to work, keep the family going, was to drive around the fields in circles, you know, over and over and over again. And as a kid, he's like, there's got to be a better way. And so this is what his mind went to. I mean, so as a kid with no education was able to bring it this far. It's a super cool story.
That's incredibly cool. I love Canadian content on the Cruel Ring. And I've got to say, I'm never going to have another opportunity to mention this weird little part of my past, so I'm going to bring it up now. I grew up in the potato belt of New Brunswick, which is also the Bible belt of New Brunswick. So take that for what it is. But one of the weirdest things about growing up in that part of New Brunswick is our school went in a month earlier than everybody else in Canada because they took us out of school for a month so that we could all harvest potatoes in the fall. So we had this odd potato break where every elementary and middle school kid and high school kid are literally pulled out of school and redeployed the farmers around the area. So
explains so much.
It sounds as though you know, the founder of your firm and I maybe have a few things in common, and one is looking around saying there's got to be a better way to do this than just taking kids out of school to pick potatoes. So, that's fascinating. Well, Alice, when we talk about what kind of really interests you and what you're trying to bring to life here at Autonomous Solutions, I get the impression that that's all started with some pretty deep listening.
Yeah, it did. So I actually have known ASI for 10 years, but I didn't really know ASI. I didn't have a full sense of what the true culture was. And I knew things before they brought me on, like their slogan, which is the people building robot company. But, you know, what does that mean? And so when I was talking to Mel, the CEO, earlier in the year, when he was asking me to join the team, and he was describing ASI as a place that people want to work, even if you don't have to. And again, like, you know, it sounds like a really great tagline, but what does that mean? So as I went through, you know, the job options that I had ahead of me in the early part of the year, ASI's authentic culture, those words started to come to life through the interviewing process. So at each level of the organization, I started to meet people that, you know, were just living those words, which I, you know, couldn't believe that you actually could, like, have these really genuine people in all facets of that particular business, really exuding purposeful work leading into their robotic, whatever contribution they're making, from the sales department to the engineering department to the finance center. And so that actually, that culture and the people around that culture were deciding factors for me to join the team. And so, yeah, I mean, that was the catalyst. And so then in the case of ASI, that culture really drew me in, but then I had to seek out more, like I said, more to do my listening first exercise, which I always do before I start any gig. So, to get a little bit more into that, I go in and I typically, any place I go in and do a mini SWOT analysis with the stakeholders. And in the case of ASI, I was given permission to talk to 40 different individuals at all different levels. And we went over, you know, what are the highs? What are the lows? What are the expectations? And the topics that we touched on were what's working for product and what's not, what's working for culture and what's not, and what have we been doing from a commercialization standpoint with sales and marketing.
Were you involving folks not in the marketing function to help you conduct the interviews as well? Or was it entirely on your side from a marketing lens that revealed these opportunities and challenges across the org and a bunch of different institutions?
Yeah, it was and actually always has been, at the last few gigs that I've been at, just me asking the questions by myself in a confidential way. I have had the opportunity to go into organizations with a new job card. So in the last few roles, it's not been to fill a position that already existed, it's to fulfill a position that's being created. ASI, in this case, had never really had a formalized marketing department. They had a bunch of specialists that service different areas of the business, like the industry of mining, the industry of automotive, but nobody really doing anything that was overarching. So I go in and I just ask that I speak to people confidentially so that I can discern, you know, everything but the kitchen sink that's being thrown at me, the marketer, to prioritize. Because, you know, people, I mean, by the time a new job card gets added, there's usually this pent up demand in so many different areas of the business that if we only had this job, you know, what would it be doing? And you want to go in and do your best work, but you also want to be highly effective in those first 100 days. So going back to it, so just me in the room. And then when I bring the results back to leadership, it's all done in that confidential way, big picture, not letting anybody know who said what.
Man, you've already painted a wonderful picture of the leader of ASI as someone who's obviously very, you know, forward looking and future looking. But it takes a lot to trust somebody new to come in, create an entirely new role, and then do a bunch of research in secret and bring that back to you. Like, there's a level of trust there. I'd almost love to be in the interview with you and be a fly on the wall to see how you spin that, not spin, that's the wrong word, but tell that story of what you're going to do.
Yes. Well, I said we knew each other for 10 years. So, and I actually would go back and say that the first time that we really were together and had to have a hard conversation, it was in a situation where it was a bit adversarial. And we both stayed very professional about it and walked away with mutual respect. So I think that was a really big fast track to building that know, like, and trust in those early years. And that just carried through to, I actually went to another job where ASI was part of the ecosystem. So we could dance around each other and get dependency from a business perspective, with our mutual interactive technologies. So when the company started to grow, because the company has grown, with everything that's being demanded of AI and automation these days, the company's actually grown threefold in just over a year. And so,
wow.
You know, they need to bring people in that they have this high level of trust with, because, and you gentlemen know it very well, you know, culture can be undermined. And really, that's at the heart of, you know, what I'm talking about with marketing with purpose.
You know, I want to get into this marketing with purpose conversation a little deeper. And it's interesting to me how when you were talking about your early exposure to the company and in the early interviews, you said in a way like you were a bit surprised, or delighted surprised. I think it was a good surprise that, wow, people are saying these things and it sounds good, but it's actually true. I think that that's a level of skepticism that an awful lot of people have when they start hearing about this notion of purpose-driven marketing. In some ways, I think it leads the more cynical among us to think that the purpose is in some way just being invented to serve the marketing. Mm-hmm. I have to think that level of skepticism probably helps you carve this out and ensure that there's a level of authenticity with it.
Yeah, well, I got burned early on with the first job that I had coming out of college. I was looking to be a stock broker. Even though I had my marketing degree, you know, that was really when Wall Street was all the rage and everybody was driving fancy cars and young and slick and, you know, just everything, all that. And the stock market crashed and I was with a company that was really just made out of cards. And to be there, you know, repping a company that just has no substance to it just really rubbed me the wrong way. And I early on came up with a mission statement for myself, a professional mission statement, which said, I not only want to be doing good work over the course of my career, but I want to be doing good works, right? And so I learned early on to only work for the companies that had quality products and services that I could really get my teeth into. And maybe your listeners on the podcast, you know, can relate to that strongly. You know, it's a heavy lift on a personal and professional level when something is gnawing at your gut, you know, as a marketer, that I might be, again, repping the wrong thing. And so if you want to, I'd give everybody, you know, if you've got that little voice or happening in your head or in your gut, you know, move on. If you really want to be authentically around this notion of marketing with purpose, because you're not going to be able to get, you know, any type of lift if all of those little voices are going off. It just won't happen. It's not real.
That's great advice. So let's talk about what you mean when you say marketing with purpose. What does that mean to you, and how do you bring it to life?
Well, it really means that, you know, you want to be able to identify, I'm just going to use ASI as an example. You want to be able to focus on what the company, in this case, ASI, what do they really mean by being a people building robot company? You want to be able to explore how marketing can humanize tech and elevate with employees' stories so that it becomes less scary. And you want to be able to then take those stories and turn them into purposeful messaging that's going to actually elevate your brand and build the trust to attract the right talent that you need.
Can you give me an example of how that was, how that's been brought to life, or a channel where you've brought that to life? Since I know that the just begun sort of building this part of it, but.
Yeah. So I also just want to take like a slight step back. So if this is resonating with people and you start a new gig, then you can't jump right into the cultural piece. You actually have to do a little housekeeping first, you know? And so going back to that diagnostic analysis that I always do, that always unveils the low hanging fruit. And so I would recommend before anybody dives into marketing with purpose that they just take an overall assessment of what needs to happen first, the first things first. And so in the case of ASI, you know, we didn't have, we had a bunch of specialists. So I had conversations with them. And the question that I ask of a staff that I'm inheriting, and actually of any staff even that I'm hiring in, what do you delight in doing? So that we bring the people and align them with the tasks that they most enjoy, all of us knowing full well that we are going to be locked into tasks that we don't always delight in, but let's make that the minority instead of the majority. So, you know, so start there, get a baseline of the talent, then move on to, you know, what do you need to do in order to create a stage to dance on so that people can find you? Again, in the case of ASI, we didn't have a strong website. Build a new website. We weren't really consistent on social channels. Clean up your social channels so that people can find you. Again, all very important before you start pushing your cultural stuff out there. We didn't have content. So then we had to start, you know, building media placements, getting speaking gigs, building videos, acquiring testimonials. So that's all been in place since I got there. We needed to get the staff in line. So all of these wonderful people that I really got a warm feeling from culturally, you know, how can we galvanize this great energy around the brand? So creating branding guidelines, you know, templates for them to use, you know, icons that they can access, PowerPoints that they can all share, email signatures that all send a similar message. These were all things that have been put into place. And then last but not least, at least for me, is to come up with some sort of operating focus for the team. And so for us, we talk about doing things with speed and excellence so that we don't get caught up in, well, especially as a technology company, being slow-moed by iterating over the creative stuff that we're doing so that we can never get out of our own way and never get to market with the messages and be falsely chasing some sort of level of perfection that slows us down. So I want to say all of that because do those things before you dive into the culture piece and the marketing with purpose piece.
That's not an insignificant lift, what you're talking about.
No, but they're quick wins, right? I mean, if you've been in marketing for a bit, and even if you're starting out like fresh from school, they kind of hand you like some of the basics. And so the bottom line is get those basics covered and then move into the bigger picture so that you can elevate your brand.
I'm trying to think about the right question to ask to lead us to a bit of a playbook here about how somebody, you know, looks at the culture of their organization and then find, you know, translates that into a forward path that really gets to that level of purpose-driven marketing. How do you, I guess, with that half question that I somewhat stumbled to get out, what do you say to that, Alice? I mean, how do you, you know, how do you move from this culture is pretty cool to something that other people are seeing?
Yeah, so I would say leaders should treat culture as a strategy because it directly impacts, you know, your brand engagement, the customer loyalty, the collaborative innovations that you do, and also that execution speed that we just kind of touched on. When leaders intentionally like design culture, just like a product or the pricing or the go-to market, they will in turn, like reduce the friction. They're going to attract and retain the top talent that they need. And they're going to create a competitive advantage that nobody else in the marketplace can copy because it's authentically them. You know, so it really needs to be there, that part of that overarching strategy.
Do you ever, doesn't have to be your current firm, but have you seen some, in trying to kind of unpack what's authentically there, have you ever had to paper over a few things that are authentically there?
You can't. That's a great question, actually. So, because there can be slippage in culture, you know, you can have somebody join onto a team that is greatly disruptive, and also could be not only disruptive but in more of a public realm. Like out there potentially being asked questions, even in a position of leadership where they're, you know, voicing to, you know, whether it's the main customers or even your ecosystem partners or your vendors, just a certain level of messaging. So yeah, there is some triage that does need to be done at times in order to not let that individual or individuals bleed into the bigger picture. I hope that answers your question, you know, without showing too much. And that's been part of the reason that I've made some changes as I go. You know, there's things that I talked about between, you know, getting away from tech back into tech where there was a lot more band-aiding going on and it's like, that gut's going off again, and it's time to move on. At least for me.
when you start talking about the gut going off, I just I'm almost like triggered because I remember one of my early agency days when I was assigned a casino account, and I could not, after about 45 minutes of a meeting, I could not sit in the meeting any longer, and I was not going to market a casino, and I didn't really care if that meant I was digging ditches, but I knew I wasn't going to do that anymore.
You're going to be like John Travolta on Saturday Night Fever, just kind of like walking out of there.
We're done. That's here.
Place to go.
It's like storming out of a casino does have a certain visual, doesn't it?
Yes.
What has been the quirkiest part of an organization's culture that you've made a bit of competitive advantage or a market advantage?
Quirkiest part that we've made a competitive advantage. I'm trying to think of quirky. Well, you know, I'm again, I like the near term things. Like our CEO that I spoke about earlier, Mel Torrey, he is such a wonderful storyteller. So storytelling is, you know, a big piece of this, but him personally, and so his background, Canadian, farm boy, the headquarters is in Utah, so the majority of the company is Mormon, so, you know, high level of faith-based, very humble, very dry wit. And so, and then to be so established and accomplished in a very competitive, low adoption area of technology still, even after two plus decades, to be able to take all of those attributes of our leader and put him in as many interviews and speaking engagements as possible is taking what, you know, could be perceived as quirky and just making it masterful. And he I can't take any of the credit for that. I give him more opportunities, but he's honed in his ability to work that, to have the polish, to take like the, whether it's the speaking, gig training, the deep dives into the topics, timing, you know, to watch the audience, you know, all of that's been honed by him over time. So
it's lovely when you have somebody who's willing to kind of, you know, they're starting out with so much, but they also know that there's a craft that they have to, you know, learn and implement and perfect in order to truly be that person who's delivering the message and the stories in that way. So I really appreciate sort of, you know, I don't think you would necessarily call him a diamond in the rough, because clearly there was much more there than that. But, you know, to be able to have that and have him, really kind of latch on to the idea too is quite wonderful.
Yeah. The testimony, we go back again, who are you attracting? You know, it's customers, but it's also in this case, growing company people. And that humility piece and putting yourself out there, the risk piece is very aspirational to the other people that are coming behind. And I hit all age groups and men and women, you know, there could be second lifer employees that are coming to the company. There could be people that were not in tech that are going to be in tech that otherwise might be really put off by the weight of the technology. Having a leader that's like that makes all the difference in the world to really grow a team.
Alice, you've sparked I've got this question rattling around in my brain. I'm wondering, do you think it's possible to do really good purpose-driven marketing without a compelling leader or CEO of the organization?
I would say it's a very hard lift. That thing about starting at the top, it starts at the top. It truly does. I think in my experience, so I know this, not just think this, that in a privately held company, it's much easier than in a public company where you are beholden to stakeholders. I can't even imagine the pressure that's on an individual when they're having to be accountable to all of those outside influences. So that privately held piece, and then to be able to maintain being privately held and in control. So, and that can help or hinder. So if the health of the leader is strong, it's going to be an asset like we're describing. If something changes dramatically, I've witnessed where in a smaller company, I don't mean me personally, I've seen it in other organizations where you have a very strong leader, and that leader in this case had a mentor who was very necessary in their lives, and that mentor passed away. And in that passing, the leader lost their footing, and in turn, the company followed suit. And so that, you know, it's not a guarantee that an aspirational leader will always stay the course.
Yeah. It, I appreciate that. I do think that it, this type of, bring this type of messaging truly to life. I couldn't agree more. It maybe isn't impossible if you don't have the inspiring leader or the inspiring founder story, but it's a damn lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. It absolutely is. And then the person that's also gives permission, like you said, that trust thing, like having me come in and ask those kind of questions, that's not something special about Alice DeSanto. That is a trust level that's given to all the other folks that are being hired into those leadership positions. That is that hold on loosely, but watch closely, you know, inspect what you expect and make sure that those people are also holding true to the culture that you're looking to maintain and grow.
And I have to think too, it really does speak to your desire to find places where you will also find personal fulfillment in kind of evaluating these leaders and organizations before, you know, making the jump, especially as a, you know, as a senior leader yourself and kind of choosing to work with a company like this. You know, you probably are able to look for that and see it before you make the leap. So pretty cool. Thanks so much, Alice. I really enjoyed having you on the show today.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah. Good way to start the year, right? With some.
Yeah.
I agree.